Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to it. Great to be with you on a Tuesday. It's Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel getting ready to hit all things. Cool video out. Nebraska does such a money job with their production staff and social media. So we'll hear, and many of you have seen it, a message from Coach Osborne to the team. Scott Frost tweeting that out. A little while ago. We'll check in with Mitch Sherman, his takeaway on the Torres commitment, College World Series, and we'll get Mitch to get his crystal ball out. Just what's the number for Will Bolt? I know we've talked about it. You have the Omaha World Herald reporting, Sam McEwen, that Bill Moos did have a sit-down with Coach Will Bolt last week. So some baseball to dive into when it comes to D-Day being Monday for sticky substances. Rob Manfred has spoken from his throne. No more spider tack. Jacob Padilla is blowing out the candles. He's a young pup, but we'll spend some time with him. We have a maybe later today for Coach Kaczynski. So Tuesdays with Kaz are a fun thing, but it's up in the air right now. Numbers to get in can join us at 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. College World Series is set. You'll be hearing parts of that coverage via Westwood One during the weekend. And on Monday, we'll be up at Zipline in Omaha. Just around the corner from TD Ameritrade. So Roadshow, we're taking the suit with us. Mr. Rob and Elijah, you got your you got your bags packed for a roadie.
I mean, it's an hour. I mean, what do we need to pack?
I don't know, dude. I don't know how you road tripped. One minute you're working, the next minute you're camping in the wintertime.
So. Yeah, I'm ready to pack up and go whenever. Like, it's the doomsday prepper within me. You ever watch that show growing up?
You know,
you got to have your bug out gear ready.
I would flip through it. I imagine there is 17 cases of pork and beans in your basement.
The beans, yes. I'm not a big fan of the canned pork.
Well, it's usually
like spam
together. No, I mean, I've never had spam, but it's together where you get the little hot dog pieces within.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I have a few of those then. Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, it's the bacon bits, but it's.
You've got canned goods galore in your basement. You're a doomsdagger?
No.
No,
I'm not.
you just point and laugh at everybody living off the land, and they have seven bomb shelters. We've got an RSVP from our dear friend Doug Duda. He just checked in from ESPN Superstation Kearney Hastings Grand Island. That's good. So can email Chris at HaleVarsity.com. Get your emails in there. Give us a follow on Twitter at Schmidt underscore radio. And at Herbal Essence for Elijah Herbal. Let's hear, you've kind of condensed the Tom Osborne comments today. Let's lead off with that because Tom Osborne's obviously incredible at what he did as a head coach and just his knowledge, his leadership, his intelligence level. And you ask his former players, some will call him Yoda or a soothsayer, whatever you want to deem him, what he says comes true. That's just his brilliance. You look at his doctorate in educational psychology, human behavior, just knowing how to motivate, knowing how to connect with people, and knowing how to lead. I mean, he's fabulous at it. And by the way, he's uber competitive and was just better than you, smarter than you. And had teams ready to go at an obscene level of consistency. And I think that's kind of what we're searching for if you're Nebraska, an obscene level of consistency, because you had it in baseball, right? You saw that in a short turnaround time, keeping with Will Bolt here. You saw that team lock in, and baseball is such a mental strain. It is. I mean, pitch by pitch, different at bats. Are you ready in the field? I mean, just go through the process of a 9-inning game. You've got to be locked in mentally on top of the requirements physically to be worth a damn. For football, it's a year-round process, and what you do in the off season really does get you ready for August, and what you do in August and then your Monday through Friday prep delivers a lot of results on Saturday. Here is Coach Osborne, his message to the team, and Tio is so good about cracking a joke. he's so good. He has this funny little one-liner joke to kind of ease the tension before he gets into the meat of his discussion.
Not going to be able to say anything to you that's going to be miraculous, but I do have a little sense of history around here. Matter of fact, I guess many people say I am history. Over that 42-year period, we never had a losing season. We won 82% of our games, 25 conference championships, and 5 national championships. The thing's important right now is to understand that it starts now. By the time you start practice in August, your season will already be 60% determined. And the question is, what kind of a price are you willing to pay? Where you end up is going to depend on how strictly you adhere to the things that you have to do. Are you willing to pay a greater price? It's not easy. If you did the right things with the right intensity on Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday, the winning and losing took care of itself. There's enough talent right now to play with any of those people. The question is, what do you do with what talent you have?
So that is a condensed version of a 4-minute video that was put out by Nebraska Football Twitter and posted by Scott Frost. And it was Coach Osborne speaking to the team, and all valid points, valid questions. Let's dive into that here. You know, it's do you want to be great? Sure. Why not? Yes. We all want to be great. What do you put in to make yourself great? And when it comes to training, okay, the time you put in that's required, I have no doubt that there's a successful plan mapped out by the coaches, by Zach Duvall, by your normal practice schedule, that you're going to be able to get reps. Now, what mistakes are you making during practice? How are those being corrected? Are they being corrected, or are you seeing the same mistakes happen? For the last 2 years, you've seen mental mistakes and false starts and holdings and things like that. What Greg Austin talked about this spring was slowing practice down for guys to finish their blocks, and you can't correct on film, you got to correct on the field. The dreaded run it again. run it again till it's right. So you make that block, so you get that technique down. So that is good. I'm not saying that's the root of all problems, but clearly Nebraska at times doesn't look like they're coached, and we know they're coached, but you're not seeing it on Saturdays. You've seen it cost you too many ball games. What do you do with that talent? To me, that's huge, because Elijah, as you look at the roster and you look at Nebraska, I grew up seeing Nebraska have or develop guys to a certain level that they could hang with. As Coach Osborne said, we have an 82% winning percentage. 8 out of 10 games, you're going to go win because you're just better. You're either better mentally, you're better physically, you're better depth-wise, and you are willing to pay that price that Coach Osborne talked about. And I think what you're running into with certain position groups in the past, and maybe it'll be different this year, maybe it won't, I don't know, time will tell, but are you putting in the extra? That's what I marvel about with some of the championship teams, okay? And Coach McBride's talked about this, Grant Wistrom's talked about this, and not to go glory days on you, but guys like Jay Moore, even, and that's during the Callahan era, but still Nebraska, you know, a Nebraska kid putting in the extra work. Are guys doing that with the playbook? Are guys doing that with their quarterback? Are guys doing that so when their time comes, they're ready to go and can kind of take the ball and run, so to speak? That's my question, because we see some position groups, and I look at running back. Are guys, are they being asked to do too much, or are they ready to go and just not getting a chance to prove they're ready when they have an opportunity in practice? Oh, and I'm just picking out one position group. Or the guys not know the playbook well enough to make a dent, to be able to run whatever the coaches want to run. I mean, those are all questions that are in the atmosphere right now. But it goes back to what Osborne said. Are you willing to pay a price? And it isn't easy. And I think guys are sick of losing. I hope, if I'm a Nebraska fan, I hope that this is the mindset. They're sick of losing to the point where they're not going to take it anymore, and they're done. They're going to do everything within their power extra on top of what's been laid out to finally get over some of those humps this year.
Yeah, and I think back to our last conversation with Amir Abdullah whenever he signed his extension, and he was telling us how on Friday nights he would be sitting down in the film room with Rex Burkhead at Memorial Stadium watching film instead of being out with his friends, being out partying, which he had the right to do. That's what you do as a college kid. But instead, he was at Memorial Stadium putting in that extra work and grinding, and you see the results that it generated. And I think that's the mindset you need to have. You have to have that mindset of, look at how hard I've worked this past year. Nobody in this country has outworked me. I'm the best. Like, nobody that I'm going to play this year is going to have outworked me. And once you have that mindset going in and saying, I outworked everybody on this field, so therefore I'm going to be better than everybody else in that field, it's a mindset thing of saying, I'm the best. We're going to win because I have gone out there and I have done the work that I needed to do, and that work is more than anybody else.
Well, what do you do with that talent? That does fall on the coaches, right? And look at a guy, and case in point with Cam Taylor-Britt. Cam Taylor-Britt played quarterback in high school and did whatever the hell he wanted on the defensive side of the ball in high school, and he comes to Nebraska, and he's done it all. He's played inside corner. He started at corner for the first time at the college level. Was incredible last year. And prior to that, filled in at safety. Look at JoJo Doman, how he's transformed himself to be a phenomenal hybrid guy, where you can cover, you can come in off the edge, and you're such a valued piece of that defense because there's no liability in your game from a size, speed, and strength standpoint at a crucial position in a 3-4 defense, an outside linebacker. Those are two guys I'm confident they're going to will that defense to keep getting better. Offensively, where's your quarterback at? And you think you got a guy in Adrian Martinez that now in his fourth year is at peace with where his game is at, with where his comfort level is? Adrian's been through so much ups and downs and tests in his life, pre-football, okay? And for it's just one more giant piece of adversity pie you got to go through a year ago where you get benched, and then you come back, and then you got to stay healthy. You know, where's he at? Where's he at to take that step and kind of regain freshman form, because the talent's there, and it's kind of time to prove it, and it is your show. There's nobody knocking on your door, and maybe he needed to be pushed again last year, and hence you had the Luke McCaffrey insertion because you weren't playing well. Now, maybe as we go back in hindsight, pulling him against Northwestern, and I was the last guy to say time to pull Adrian, because I don't think you do that to your quarterback. And even after that touch, that interception in the end zone where it was just an off throw where he had Austin Allen, right? That interception in the red zone is just a killer, right? And Nebraska's red zone issues have been well documented. I'm the last guy to get on the, well, let's try Luke out bandwagon, but I was calling for it just sitting in my chair watching Nebraska Northwestern a year ago. He comes in. There's still red zone problems. You don't do much offensively. And then you got this quarterback merry-go-round. And what happens? Well, Adrian's able to roll with the punches, battle back, show some real mental strength. And you finish out, even after a horrific turnover-filled first half, where you're trying to do too much. You're not taking care of the football. I'm anxious to see what you do, to Tom Osborne's point, what you do with that talent. That's on the coaches. That's on the players. And there's just there's an exhaustion of energy waiting for this thing to pop. And there's so much buildup about year four. And what do you get done with this team that's been gifted a lot of returning difference makers on defense, pretty good offensive line on offense? Do you find a couple of backs to lean on? Does your quarterback take that step forward where you make plays in games and you end up winning? And we've seen Adrian do a ton, but those games a lot of times have been out of hand or there's no chance. I think of the Wisconsin's your case in point. It's your perfect example where you're shredding a Wisconsin defense, but you put up 24 points and you lose by 17. I mean, they're empty calorie numbers. So good stuff from Coach Osborne, tweeted out by Nebraska. We'll dive into a ton of things with Mitch Sherman next from The Athletic. It's Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio?
On Hail Varsity Radio presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Thanks for hanging out. Hail Varsity Radio, a Tuesday, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Mitch Sherman with us from The Athletic, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, how's your week? What's up?
My week is good. Getting my car cleaned up for the Big Red Blitz tomorrow. So you got me at the pool last week, and today I'm at the car wash.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Where are you going to be heading? Are you going to Columbus?
I'm not going to Columbus. Who's in Columbus? Is that that it's like a Tuioti group, maybe?
Might be. Let me pull that up here. It's a good question.
While you're doing that, I am going to be in Grand Island.
Okay.
For Fred Hoiberg and Travis Fisher. And then I'm jumping groups to Kearney for the head football coach, Scott Frost, with Nate Lenzer, new basketball assistant. So, I'm going to get a double dose of Big Red Blitz.
Well, that'll be nice. I mean, good for you, because I know there's going to be some. You had North Platte, you have Kearney at 2:30, and that's where Coach Frost will be at. And no, man, you'll get it done. I can't wait to get your take on some things with that. I want to get your thoughts here on Will Bolt and compensation, and I bring that up because I'm just curious to see A, how soon that happens, and B, you know, what the number is after we look at what Nebraska was able to do. And by the way, just a little aside, how shocked are you Arkansas got whacked?
Well, after 21-2 on Friday night, I didn't see it coming. Yeah. I thought going into the week that we would see the Hogs in Omaha, and then it seemed to be basically a done deal with the shellacking that Arkansas put on NC State. But hey, credit to NC State. Wow. To come back from that and just have the tenacity to really even be able to go out on the field and feel good about yourself on Saturday, great job by the leaders on that team and the coaches on that team. I'm interested to see NC State in Omaha just because of that. Because if you can go into Arkansas and come back from one down in front of that crowd, then whatever you see in Omaha is really you know, I don't want to say it's easy, but it's not that kind of a challenge. I mean, you're going to get Stanford on Saturday early in the day and in front of a neutral crowd. It's going to be an electric atmosphere, I think, just because the baseball is back. But NC State is a team to watch after what it did. I'm surprised by Arkansas, but not shocked that a team that relies so much on one arm didn't make it all the way.
Same here. They were the favorites, and they didn't deliver, and kudos to NC State. When it comes to Will Bolt and compensation, You know, he's at 300K now. That's fifth in the league. Back to this conversation, there's going to be a reinvestment with recruiting budget assistance and Coach Bolt, it sounds like, from Bill Moose. So I'm wondering what that number looks like. What's a – and I know we hit on this last week, but it's a little bit more fresh just with a report out there by the World Herald. So I'm interested to know just how soon – you know, what's the timeline on something like that, Mitch, in your dealings and working workings with administration from a reporting standpoint? Yeah. What's the turnaround?
Yeah, right, quickly. I mean, the new fiscal year starts July 1st, so a lot of times you want to make decisions in time for that if it matches up with the sport calendar. And generally these evaluations happen right after the year. So I would think that the season's over now, and Bill Moose and the sport administrator, whoever deals with baseball, if it's not Bill Moose directly, they're going to be sitting down and talking with Will Bolt and, you know, make it known that he is a prized commodity at Nebraska and that he should be paid like one of the top coaches in the Big Ten. Now, he's young, and his experience doesn't match up to what you have at some programs in the league. And you have a guy at Michigan, obviously, and Eric Backett, who took his team to a College World Series championship series. And that, you know, especially at Michigan, which can invest in successful programs, is going to make him highly compensated. I would imagine after that run that the Wolverines had in 2019, he is the highest paid coach in the league. I don't know that for certain, but it would surprise me if it's anything but that. And I don't know that Will Bolt is going to pass him on the pay scale, but a couple more conference championships, maybe a trip to Omaha, and yeah, you'd expect it because Nebraska baseball is going to bring in revenue. And it's going to bring in more revenue than likely any program in the Big Ten for its school. So I would think it would happen fast. And, you know, Will's not going to be out there saying, hey, pay me now or I'm going to run to the SEC or the Big 12. You know, we're seeing these schools fill jobs. I see TCU now is hiring Kirk Sarlos, longtime assistant at many schools and, you know, a name that's been known as a pitching guru for many years in the sport, and of course A&M has hired Jim Schlossnagel from TCU. You know, Will Bolt's not going anywhere, and that's not the reason that Nebraska's going to pay him. They're going to pay him because of the great job that he's done in two seasons, in particular what he did with this team this year in a difficult circumstance to come off the pandemic without a full year under your belt as a head coach at the school, win the league going away, and then have a great showing in the regional in a hostile environment. So he'll get paid for that, and you know, I think it would be a sizable increase that puts him probably among the top two or three in the league.
So, Mitch, if there isn't much fear about Will Bolt going elsewhere this offseason, how much then risk is there in giving him an extension and a raise at this moment in time whenever he's only had one season?
I think Nebraska knows what it has in him, and you know sometimes it takes 5 years to determine if a guy is the right fit for your program, and sometimes it takes 3 months. And with Will Bolt, I think Nebraska knows at this point that he's the guy that it wants running this program. You know, it was easy to see this year that what Nebraska did was not, you know, with mirrors. It wasn't by chance. That this was through hard work, and this was through empowering the players to lead this program and be strong-minded and resilient and very focused in what they were doing. Nebraska baseball had an identity this year that I would say, and nothing against Darren Erstad because he had good teams, but I don't know that they ever had this strong of an identity under him, even as hard-nosed. I think Darren struggled, and we've probably talked about this over the years. I think there were times where Darren struggled because he was so talented and so driven and so much just built to be a player that it was hard at times for him to come back to the level of the guys that he coached in college and not understand, you know, why this guy didn't completely sell out every ounce of energy in his body every day, every moment, because that's how Darren Erstad played. And if there's that disconnect at all between coach and player, it can lead to, you know, some things where the identity isn't as strong. Will Bolt is a coach all the way. And he was a coach when he was a player in a lot of respects. So he's a perfect fit, and I think everybody sees that who watched Nebraska baseball this year. So there's not really a risk. The risk would be in not paying him, in not giving him the compensation and the respect that he's earned, even at this young age and this level of experience in the game. And if you don't do that, you know, then you do run the possibility that a year or 2 years down the road, he could see something at an SEC or Big 12 program or an ACC program and make that jump. But, again, this is his alma mater. It's like Dave Van Horn going home to Arkansas. I think this is where he wants to be for a long time, and I think that'll work out with the way that Nebraska treats him.
Mitch Sherman's with us, Hail Varsity Radio. Mitch with The Athletic, at Mitch Sherman on Twitter. Mitch, let's talk recruiting. Richard Torres verbally committing. What's your take on the quarterback from San Antonio? What did you think of his film, and what did you think of Nebraska's get of this 2022 signal caller?
Yeah, it's interesting to see the direction that Nebraska has gone with its quarterbacks the last 2 years. Of course, you had Heinrich Harburg last year, big 6'5 guy out of Kearney, and now another 6'5, 6'6 perhaps, gunslinger from San Antonio. Quite a change, quite a shift from Logan Smothers and Luke McCaffrey in the two previous years, and even Adrian Martinez is about 6'2". So Nebraska wants to go big with its quarterbacks. And I know not everybody that the Huskers offered were giant guys, huge guys like Torres and Harburg this year. But this is where they've ended up. And, you know, you see in the 23 class, they've offered Reese Mooney, the kid from Louisiana. I believe he's about 6'4". So that's a trend, not just at the quarterback spot, but all over, I would say, the offense. I mean, defense, you're going to want size, of course, and speed. And I don't think Nebraska's changed a whole lot what it wants on the defensive side, athleticism. Offensively, big running backs like Gabe Irvin and Marquis Stepp, the transfer from USC, and you see Jacquez Gant emerging this spring. Big tight ends. One of the biggest tight end rooms in the country. Austin Allen and Thomas Fedoni and Travis Vokolek are big guys. Big receivers now with Omar Manning bringing in Samari Toure, some of the recruits like Latrell Neville and Sean Hardy that Nebraska signed this year. And then the offensive line is huge too, like 6'8", 6'9 guys on that offensive line. So it stands to, it would be contradictory if you had all that size and then you were recruiting 6'1 quarterbacks, 6 foot, 6'1 quarterbacks. No one's going to be able to see them in the huddle or in the meeting room. So Nebraska's offense is going to be big. And that's a direct reaction, I would say, to the way that the first few years have gone in the Big Ten. Nebraska doesn't want to get pushed around when it has the ball. It wants to go out and be the more physical, tone-setting team. And that includes the quarterback spot, a guy who can throw it as well as anybody in the league down the field, I think ultimately is what Nebraska is looking for. It seems to have found a guy with that kind of an arm in Richie Torres.
Mitch, about a minute left. You don't have to answer this, but I got to ask, have you used Spider Tech ever when on the mound?
You know, the last time I pitched, like competitively,
yeah, when,
I was, like,
was
16
when?
Years old. I mean, really
no.
Pitched? I mean, I pitched every day. Like, I pitched constantly in practice and, in the cage. But I'm not using Spider. No, against the 10-year-olds, I am not using Spider Tech.
Just making sure, man.
I understand it's only like a mix. It's sunscreen and, dirt? I don't know. But
rosin. Rosin and sunscreen.
Yeah, rosin. Okay, yeah. Nope. Never used it, never tried it, but I might because I need to pick up my spin rate. The kids are starting to hit my straight stuff pretty well, so spin rate needs to go up. I'm going to, while everybody else is getting rid of the Spider Tech, I'm going to start using it so I can strike these guys out.
Under the bill, Mitch. Under the bill, just like
put it in my glove. I'm gonna flaunt it. I'm gonna show them the stuff on my hands, and then get strike them out.
That's pretty good, Mitch. Have a good roadie, bud. Out to your two stops for the. The Big Red Blitz, and we'll see you hopefully around CWS next week.
All right, I'll be there. Thanks, Chris.
Take care, bud. There he is, Mitch Sherman. So no. we get him at the pool, and he's vacuuming his car out, and you're an ump.
Yeah, no, I was just going to say, you said throw it underneath the bill of the cab. No, throw it on the second baseman somewhere, and then whenever you toss the ball around after a strikeout, he gets to put it on the ball himself.
The old around the horn camo. More baseball thoughts coming up at Tail Varsity.
Chime in 402-466-ESPN or email the show, Chris at HaleVarsity.com.
Just try me.
Back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Good to have you back. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Jacob Padilla coming up in 20 minutes. We've got a 50-50 shot on Coach Kaz at 5:25. Is it time to do away with divisions in college football? We'll tackle that in the 5 o'clock hour. The Goo Cops, as they've been called, are set to do their examinations on Monday. As Major League Baseball's responded, their plan to combat the use of foreign substances is firmed up, and a memo is out to teams. So that's how things are gonna roll. And you have spider tech, you've got spray-on suntan lotion, you have a mix of rosin, you have the old KY or Vaseline ball that Harris or Gaylord Perry used to use, and it's been problematic. You've had constant complaining for a while now this year with what pitchers have alleged to have been doing, and you've got Trevor Bauer and Garrett Cole, two of your more well-known pitchers, and Cole's got the best contract in all of baseball because of what he's been able to do, and there's been some accusations and some allegations about just what pitching has done. And think about that. When you have the batting average at a 50-year low, you have already had six no-hitters. Now, is that all due to spider tack or suntan lotion or better doctoring of the ball? Probably a little bit, but here's Garrett Cole from a week ago. He was given the old, gotcha, in a postgame, and this was horrific. So he pretty much ratted out everybody that climbs the hill in Major League Baseball, whether you do it or not.
And have you ever used spider tack while pitching?
I don't. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know quite. I don't quite know how to answer that, to be honest. I mean, there are customs and practices that have been passed down from older players to younger players, from the last generation of players to this generation of players. And, you know, I think there are some things that are certainly out of bounds in that regard. And I've stood pretty firm in terms of that, in terms of the communication between our peers and whatnot. You know, and I, again, like I mentioned earlier, there's, you know, this is important to a lot of people that love the game. And this is including the players in this room, including fans, including, you know, teams. And so if MLB wants to, you know, legislate some more stuff, that's a conversation that we can have.
Man, that's the word. That's Billy Madison talking about the dog during story time. When he's doing the brain bowl towards the end of the movie, and the teacher stops and says, "That's the stupidest answer I've ever heard in my life. May God have mercy on your soul. None of us are smarter. In fact, we're dumber for that answer. Don't go rite of passage on me when it comes to, well, you know, it's yes, it's no, and you have the right to say no comment. You can say next question. You can say, hell yes, and I have seven Ferraris because of my contract, and I'm good without it, but man, am I great with it.
Yeah, something Jim Rome said last week was, when asked a yes or no question, if your answer is anything but no, that means yes. And that's very true there.
I don't disagree with that, but
I mean, all the pitchers in the MLB are doing it. Like, this isn't a Garrett Cole thing. I know he had that terrible answer, so that's why it's going around. But I mean, Trevor Bauer, I think it was 4 years ago, in one offseason, his spin rate went from like the 50th best starting pitcher in the majors to number one in one offseason. Like, there's things these guys are doing that is I mean, there's a reason spin rate is higher now on the balls than it's ever has been, and it's not because they have this technology to finally track it and stuff and they can work on it. It's because they're applying substances to the ball to be able to get that spin rate. Everyone
right.
knows it.
And listen, you faster your spin rate, the more breaking pitches move, the more velocity you have, the tougher it is to hit, more strikeouts, more swings and misses. Balance of power in pure favor of the pitcher. Now, I will say this in defense of pitchers. You had a generation of people treating themselves like a pincushion, and scrawny leadoff guys were going yard 50 times a year. You've had to endure the steroid era. Not now, Gerrit Cole, Trevor Bauer. But listen, chicks dig the long ball. People love watching offense. I love watching just good baseball. It can be a score fest, or it can be a 3-2 ball game. I really am not picky. I just want to see good baseball.
Well, that's been the point of emphasis recently, is they're trying to lower this time of these baseball games, and that's not my problem as a baseball fan. If it's a great baseball game, I don't care if it goes 4.5 hours. My problem is whenever you have, you know, a 3-hour and 45-minute just bore fest where I want to sleep halfway through. That's the problem.
My problem is someone that's OCD Nomar like, where you're adjusting your cup, then you're spinning 4 times, and then you've got your routine as you step out of the box each pitch, or someone that's on the mound 17 times shaken off, or that's not a non-rhythm pitcher when he's on the hill. I'll say this, Major League Baseball and pitchers, I mean, here's what I feel the pitchers are honestly doing. They want to get paid. They want to really post pandemic and jacking with last year's schedule. They want to get paid. They want to own the box, but they also know that, listen, the balls aren't like they used to be. I think there's a real contingent of pitchers out there that say, look, man, the baseballs we're using are way more hitter friendly. They're going to fly out. This is our recourse. The owners are good with not having or having a different ball that, you know, a live ball era for offense. And that makes our job tougher. So when it comes to negotiating, my wins and losses in ERA got to be in place, and this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to, if you ain't cheating, you ain't trying. And where are you going to go with this? Major League Baseball's responded. They're going to have routine checks of pitchers. They're going to check relief guys when they come out, after they come in, after the inning's done. They're going to routinely check catchers. They're going to check whoever they need to check. It could be the second baseman with a smear of something on his belt. And that's just how it is. And guys are just going to have to get more creative if they want to continue to doctor the ball. It's not sandpaper in the back pocket back in the day to get a better grip. So we'll see where this goes. We'll see if offense suddenly jumps.
I mean, strikeouts right now are higher than they've ever been in Major League history.
It's incredible. 6 no-hitters, record number of strikeouts, under 260 as an average for the league. Which is incredible. You need a happy medium, but the crackdown's there, and the gotcha moment was a week ago. Major League Baseball's responded after weeks and weeks and weeks of complaints from owners.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
10 minutes away, we'll check in with Jacob Padilla, HailVarsity.com and Magazine. Dead period ends. It's the phone call / contact frenzy for the 2023 basketball recruiting class. We'll get Jacob's take on things, see how summer basketball's going, and dive into some football topics with him as well. Reminder about buckling up and getting that safe ride home. Over 1,500 crashes each year in Nebraska involving an impaired driver driving drunk, buzzed, or high. Never acceptable. Law enforcement officers are working every day to stop it before more people are killed or injured. If you're going to drive, don't drink. If you do drink, get a designated sober driver or get a ride share. A DUI costs more than you think. Brought to you by the Nebraska Department of Highway Safety Office, 466-377-6800-825-5865. Back to doctoring the baseball and spider tack and foreign substances. 10 games that's paid enough, too little, just right. We can discuss that for sure. But 10 games is pretty much two starts, five-man rotation.
I mean, this is giving me big vibes of the Astros punishment, if you will, where it's they're trying more to get it out of the game more than they're trying to punish the guys for doing it. It's like, okay, guys, like, you've been caught. We know you caught. Now that you've been caught, just change up what you're doing. We won't be mad at you for what you've done in the past, where everyone else has been doing. But now that we're trying to crack down on it, just don't be an idiot.
Well, it's affecting offense. It's affecting wow from the fans and the stands and viewership. It's you know what? If you can get to that no-hitter or perfect game, sweet. It's cool. There's been six of them. But you want to see offense. You want to see the long ball. That's exciting. And that's where owners and really honestly batters are coming from. Who are you circling? Have you picked yet? Have you predicted? Now that the College World Series field is set, of course, Saturday, 1 o'clock, Stanford, NC State, Vandy, the nightcap against Arizona at 6. Then you got Tennessee and Virginia at 1. Texas and Mississippi State at 6 on Sunday. And then you'll have your elimination games. You'll have your winner's brackets, your loser's brackets, all that good stuff. We'll have the 6 o'clock game and the 1 o'clock game. I believe the 1 o'clock game Saturday. We'll have the 6 o'clock game Monday, and then we'll have the 1 o'clock game Sunday here on ESPN Lincoln.
So we have the 6 o'clock game Monday right after us on Hill. Yeah, what game is that?
Don't know.
Let's check. I have it pulled up here. It's going to... Oh, games. It's to be determined still.
Uh-huh, that's
so,
exactly.
But it's a winner's bracket, yeah?
I believe so, yes.
I got to figure out less which team I think is going to win it all and which team I think is just my team to root for this year.
I think you could see a Vandy-Tennessee finale.
Yeah, I think that Tennessee team's pretty good. I mean, that walk-off from where it's sick. But who are you rooting for, though? Are you going to go with your son and go with Vandy?
You know, they just won it. No. Give me Rocky Top.
You're going to Tennessee? I think I'll root for NC State just because of what they did to Arkansas. They got the retribution for Nebraska, so I think I gotta root NC State, but so I don't think they're gonna win it all.
You're adopting NC State. Okay. All right. No, that's good. They're I think what 2013 last time they were in Omaha.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be good.
I wish I had Dallas Baptist to root for. That's who I was going
for.
You wanted
the underdog, and you got a bunch of teams that have won it or been there before. Hour two on the way with Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Welcome to an hour two at Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel. Well, we have a virtual ice cream cake for him. We should have just got him one because he's blowing out the candles. Still a young pup. Jacob Padilla with us here from HailVarsity.com and magazine at Jacob_Padilla on Twitter. Jacob, how are we celebrating the birthday? What's your plans today?
I'm just driving back from the Lincoln Summer League and hoping to be able to play a little bit of basketball myself later tonight if we get enough together.
So your birthday wish is to rain some threes with pickup later. Good for you. What stuck out today during Summer League for basketball?
I don't know that anything in particular stuck out, just kind of more seeing – getting a better feel for all these teams, seeing them into week two. I think the Lincoln talent is pretty spread out. I think there are going to be a handful of teams in Lincoln that are really going to compete, and it'll be interesting to kind of watch the race for the city title there between Southwest and North Star and Pius. A couple of these other teams are trying to kind of get in that same mix. some of these teams are really experienced. Some of them have younger guys that are trying to kind of find their way at the varsity level and grow into difference makers. So I think basketball in Lincoln is going to be fun to follow this year.
Well, we've been covering it for years, and it's been just great to see so many of the different teams play at a high level, and the field's been, you're chasing the Omaha Metro, and that speaks to Championship Saturday in March. But you've had more and more Lincoln teams find their way. North Star's been to state. East has been to state. Pius and Coach Spitschka, they've won it, you know, and they've also played at a really high level. And, you know, Lincoln High isn't far removed from some really good teams. Southeast has been there. So there's a wealth of talent in Lincoln, but you're chasing either some of those central teams or the Omaha South or, of course, Bell West or Millard North, right? So in your opinion, how is that gap still between Omaha and Lincoln when it comes to boys prep?
Yeah, there's probably still a little bit of a gap there. Just simply, I think probably the two best teams in the state are Bellevue West and Omaha West Side, just based on what they've got coming back and what they've added. And then after that, I think it does kind of open up, though. You've got some good teams, like Creighton Prep's always going to be good. You've got some others. But I think after that is kind of where Lincoln can kind of crack into that mix and that back half of the top 10 potentially. Get a chance to earn a bid or two to state. So I think a big part of the growth is kind of the improving facilities and somewhere like the Kinetic Sports Complex that I just spent all day at is, I think that's huge for the growth of basketball in Lincoln. That's kind of what I think sparked a lot of it up in Omaha, is just kind of the expansion of facilities all over the place. And all the different gyms that kids have the opportunity to go hit to get better. And now we're starting to see Lincoln get a little bit more of that as well. And I think that'll only continue to help the talent improve.
Jacob, I think the top-level talent in high school basketball right now in Nebraska is the best I've ever seen in my lifetime. And you're talking about like new facilities still coming about in Lincoln. So do you think that top-level talent is just going to keep on getting better and better over the next coming years, or is this like we need to appreciate what we got right now?
Yeah, I think the top level talent is kind of, is cyclical. It's kind of the luck of the draw at a population level like Nebraska's. You're not going to have guys like Hunter Salas come along every year. You're not going to have top 100 guys like Isaac Trout every year. And even now we're seeing in that 2023 class, guys are still trying to kind of establish themselves. Midnight last night is kind of the start of when D1 coaches can start reaching out.
Hello, Jacob. Go ahead.
Yeah?
We lost you, bud. You said coaches are reaching out, and then you hit a dead spot.
Oh, sorry. Coaches started at midnight last night. Coaches are able to reach out directly and call and text 2023 kids. And start that recruitment more personally. So we'll see kind of what's emerging in this next class. But I think a guy like Josiah Dotzler has a chance to be a really good player at the next level. And then we've got a lot of other guys that are still kind of, I think we're figuring out what level they're going to belong at the next level. And it was good to see today. I guess another highlight was Brendan Clemens Jr. at North Star, who has been out the last few weeks with injury, and he was out there playing today. And welcome back, Brendan. Your first game is against Isaac Trout. Good luck. So that was fun to watch, though. So we'll see kind of where this next, the 2023, 2024, 2025 kind of classes, where they stack up compared to what we've seen the last couple of 2021, 2022. But I definitely think we need to enjoy kind of what we have, because you never quite know, again, when the next five-star or high four-star kid is going to come through these parts.
Clemens is so much fun, and I've seen him at North Star, and I know he's battled some injuries, but great size, nice hands, good around the rim. We'll get to Isaac Trout in a second. I know he was at Virginia recently, but Jacob, just in your opinion here, you, with the dead period winding down, you know, what are the priorities for Nebraska and Coach Hoiberg here for 2023? What can they do locally, and what do they do nationally here to make a big time dent and keep adding to this talent at PBA?
Yeah, and obviously we've already seen them kind of laying down the groundwork for that class.
Mm-hmm.
There's still lots of work to do in 2022, but they've been, in addition to the 2022 official visitors, they've been bringing in 2023 kids on unofficial visits. Obviously, Simeon Wilshire, the brother of Xavier transfer, CJ Wilshire, mm-hmm. who's going to be playing for Nebraska, he was here. Check out campus. Omaha Ballou, obviously we talked about him previously. And Gus Yalvin was just here this last week, nicknamed Baby Jokic. He's a big body kid that has some real skills. So they're starting to kind of lay down the groundwork and start building up those relationships with some really talented kids in that class. And that's where I think the success that we talked about last week, where, all right, this is kind of a big stretch here with Nebraska, where they got to start producing wins to go with some of these recruiting wins if they want to be able to kind of keep this going.
Now, Jacob, I love Gus Yalvin. It's his name on Twitter, I think, is Gus Bus. And you said his nickname's, yep, Baby Jokic. He just seems to fit so perfectly into what Fred Hoiberg wants to do. I mean, you can speak on that in a second, with his ability to stretch the floor, run the point from the five position. But whenever I look at it, I think the major pundits out there right now are saying he's probably a Wisconsin guy. Is Wisconsin the team to beat right now? And would you agree with my assessment that he would fit well into what Hoiberg wants to do here at Nebraska?
Yeah, I don't know if there's ever anybody truly to beat when you're talking about kids that are two classes away. There's still so much time, and again, he just started taking visits. There will be other schools that kind of dive in there as well. And it's a kid that he's kind of been around. He's gone to California for school. He's gone to Florida for high school. He's kind of transferred. He was at Modern Day and transferred to IMG. So he's a kid that's willing to leave home. He's been different places, so I think there's a long way to go on that recruitment. But, yeah, I mean, Fred Hoiberg really likes skill. And he's a guy that, like you said, can step out and knock down a shot, can handle the ball on the perimeter for a guy of his size, and can pass the ball a little bit. So that's kind of what he wants, is kind of the ability to go five out. There's a space. Obviously, with some of the guys they recruited, there's kind of a role for guys that are more traditional kind of rim runner types. That kind of complements some of their other playmaking guards and wings. But if you get a big guy that can play with some skill, then that opens up a lot more within what Fred Hoiberg wants to do.
Jacob Adilla is with us, HailVarsity.com and Magazine, talking some summer leagues, some summer hoops. So is, in your opinion, with Trout's visit to Virginia, I know Sparty is on the horizon. I know North Carolina's on the horizon. He had a good time in Lincoln, but is Virginia the leader in the clubhouse now?
They're definitely up there. They've been recruiting him a long time, and they've been going hard, pushing hard. But I think he's going to, like I said, I think he's going to really go into this with an open mind and really going to try to figure out a lot of stuff during these visits. And he mentioned the visits he's taking are the schools that have shown the most interest in him. And that's where that's where he's choosing to use his official visits here. So obviously Nebraska, Virginia, North Carolina, Michigan State, and then Oklahoma is kind of another one he's looking to take probably in the fall, and then I think Creighton will still be in that mix as well. So I think that's probably the list that you're looking at. And I mean, a school like Virginia, they've had a lot of success recently, and they're probably selling on a couple guys they've had recently that have done very well there. So it's going to be an absolute battle, I think, down to the end with Isaac. And he said he's not afraid to kind of push it to the late signing period. So I don't know that we're coming up on a decision anytime soon.
Jacob, going to switch gears to football, and I know you hone in on hoops, but I love your take on what your eyes show you and tell you on film. And we talked to Greg yesterday about Torres. You know, what's your take on Nebraska's perceived shift here to maybe throw first, bigger body quarterbacks in the Big Ten, kind of going away from probably the smaller dual threat guys, but getting bigger guys that can still run, but man, have great arms. What's your take on Torres from what you've seen?
Yeah, it certainly does seem like they are focusing more that way with the last two quarterbacks they've got, with Heinrich Harburg and now Richard Torres, 6'5", 6'6", type kids that big arms. And like you mentioned, there is still a little bit of running ability there, but don't know that you're going to go out and have like 180-yard rushing gains from these guys. So I think it's hard to know at this point. Obviously, it's two in a row, but how much of that is a complete philosophy shift and how much of it is, hey, these are the guys that we liked best mm-hmm. out of the ones that we had a chance at. So I think that's still, if they find a really talented dual threat guy in 2023, I don't think they'd be shy about really going hard after that guy. But we'll have to see kind of over the next couple of years how this quarterback battle goes in terms of who succeeds Adrian Martinez as a starter and kind of how things go with that. Because they struggled, obviously, a little bit running the offense to a certain degree, but they also haven't had all the pieces in place to see what it really looks like. So I think that's one we're going to need to continue studying what they do on the field here right after Adrian Martinez and kind of who they continue looking at on the recruiting trail.
Last thought here, Jacob. I'll let you go celebrate your birthday. I was pretty intrigued by Coach Osborne's address to the team. We just got a four-minute snippet on social media. But Coach Osborne was talking about the fact that there's enough talent here to play with anybody. And, you know, he put a challenge to the kids. You know, what do you do with your talent? When you look at Nebraska's roster and talent and kind of scan across the Big Ten, you've got Ohio State that's on top of the mountain from a development and talent standpoint. Michigan's always recruited well. But Nebraska's been right there. Michigan, I should say, Wisconsin and Iowa and Northwestern do a wonderful job. So does Minnesota in talent development. Overall, if you were going to give me a talent number out of 10, what would you kind of rate Nebraska's talent? Just roster and kids that are good athletes as a whole here, when you look at kind of the two deep or what we project anyway going into this season. Has talent been Nebraska's problem here the last couple of years?
That's kind of an interesting discussion because, obviously, in terms of star rankings, and they're not the elite, but they're also above some teams that have had more success than them. It's kind of hard to differentiate, though, between that development and the recruiting in terms of, all right, were these kids really that talented and Nebraska just wasn't able to get much out of them, or were they misevaluated, or kind of what was the deal there? So I think probably in that, what, seven-ish range, mm-hmm. 6-7 range, kind of in terms of talent on the field, there's probably a little bit higher in terms of potential, I would say, which is probably kind of more in line with what you're talking about when you say talent. Mm-hmm. But until those guys actually get on the field and are part of the team that's actually making a difference out there, then I don't know how talented you can say the team really is, because those guys, we've seen a lot of four-star guys come in and not be able to really crack the rotation and make a difference. So it's all tied in together in terms of when you're talking about talent, development, recruiting, it's all different parts of the same conversation, I think.
Squeezing that juice out, isn't it? You know, what do you get out of it, and how do you perform in key moments? Jacob, have a safe trip back. Have a wonderful birthday. Thanks for jumping on. It's been fun chatting with you.
Yep, thanks for having me.
All right, there he is, Jacob Bedillo with us on Hail Varsity Radio. You know, that is interesting here when you look at, you know, what's held Nebraska back. Has it been coaching? Has it been talent? Has it been development? Has it been focus? I mean, it's all a giant circle. And there's different stops here as we get ready for the Big Red Blitz. There's been a game you've lost, and it's been one thing or another. We'll dive into the college football playoff discussion here. Is it time to do away with divisions? We'll get into it next to Tale Varsity Radio.
Chime in 402 888-266-ESPN or email the show, chris@hailvarsity.com.
Just try me. Try me.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Good to have you back. Numbers to get in. Open phones here till 6-466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. You can email chris@hailvarsity.com. Find us on Twitter at @Schmidt_radio, at Herbal Essence for Elijah Herbal. Let's get some more playoff talk. And this is interesting when we look at the postseason. So you go through the list, and we've seen projections like this going all the way back to when the 4-team playoff was implemented. What would a 12-team breakdown look like? And as you zoom out, there's been a lot of years where you'd have Bama, LSU, Georgia, or Bama, LSU, some years Florida. And in a couple of instances, when it comes to projections with the 12 team, you had as many as 4 or 5 SEC teams. And while that can wear you out, you've had a handful of seasons, too, in the Big 12, where, okay, it's been Texas and Oklahoma, but only one got in. And Oklahoma's made it 4 times. And then you look over at the Big Ten, you have Penn State, you have Ohio State, and then some years Wisconsin. There's been years where you've had 2 Big Ten teams in the New Year's Day 6, Penn State, Wisconsin, and you've had Ohio State in the 4-team playoff. So is this going to be the new normal? And Pete Thamel tweeting this out, as teams prepare to discuss the 12-team playoff, the fate of divisions going to be in the crosshairs. With more at-large bids at stake, leagues may find more urgency to put their 2 best teams in the league title game. Expect leagues to make a deep dive into this potential impact. What do you want as a Big Ten fan? Do you still want the Big Ten championship game pitting the West against the East? Or do you want it done Big 12 style, where it's a round robin? Now, with 14 teams, you're not going to get a true round robin, and that's problematic. You're not getting Alabama in most years, where their crossover is going to be anyone tough beyond their normal Tennessee East Division rival. They're border states. They hate each other. Bama plays Tennessee every year. Well, the last couple of years, you've had Florida. Once in a while, you get A&M. A&M is part of their division. But it's not often you're going to get Florida or Georgia on the schedule if you're Alabama as your crossovers with that SEC West. We've talked a lot about Nebraska's schedule, where they're getting the who's who of the East Division. They played Ohio State a lot of years consecutively. They've gotten Penn State. And they're going to have more Michigan on their schedule as Ohio State kind of rotates off. But you're shot for the West if you don't get a crack at an Ohio State, Michigan, or Penn State, let's say, is to get them in Indy for the Big Ten championship game. Do you want to risk, as the Big Ten, losing a potential second team? Say it's a 3-loss Iowa team or a 2-loss Iowa team in the Big Ten championship game that gets mauled by Ohio State. That's your division winner. Should they get the nod over a 1-loss Penn State team? I think the playoff committee do the right thing, take a second Big Ten team, and even though a Penn State, if we're talking historically speaking, isn't a division winner, guess what? They're still going to get the nod. They're going to get the nod over the West Division. Maybe they had a head-to-head. Maybe they just got a better record. But I don't know that the Big Ten's going to jump at this right away. I think the Big Ten, in most years, is gold getting 2, and they'll have a good argument most years for 3.
I don't think that just completely nixing divisions is the way to go. I think that it's going to create more problems, more teams shaking their fist at the conference saying, why'd you give us this schedule this year? But I think the way to go is just not
to protect your big dogs, aren't you?
Well, yeah. And I just don't think that that these rigid divisions we're in now is the way to go in the future of college football. I think you go more towards rotating these divisions every 2-3 years. Every single 2-3 years, you have the commissioners come together and say, or not the commissioners, excuse me, the presidents, the athletic directors come together and say, all right, let's rotate these divisions again. Let's balance out the power once again. So you're not going to have this loaded East and this weak West that we've seen the past couple of years, I guess you could say. I think the way to go is just, I mean, keep your protected rivalries in the season, but then just rotate the divisions. I think every 2 or 3 years is the way to go. Even 5 would be better than what we have now.
As a whole, you've had good balance. I know it's been Ohio State, Ohio State, Ohio State, and then you had Penn State 1 year. The West hasn't broken through in the Big Ten title game, clearly. But during the regular season, because of these crossover games, you've had the West rise up, and it's not been the West's best, per se. I mean, it's been just absolutely what the hell. I mean, when Iowa crushed Ohio State, that was a good Iowa team, okay? Not a good Purdue team. Penn State's gotten damaged, quite honestly, the last couple, 3 years when they've had to cross over. They survived Iowa. They've lost to Nebraska last year. Minnesota stung them 2 years ago. So it's not easy. And you're going to have teams like Maryland, I think, creep up a little bit with their offense and their recruiting, where they're going to be a pain in the neck.
And what, Shiano could do at Rutgers, too.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I think Rutgers is going to be a real nightmare because of the talent he's going to harvest. I mean, he'll be great with that. And Northwestern, right? Northwestern makes every quarterback look bad. They made Fields look horrible. His numbers were identical to what got Adrian Martinez yanked in that championship game. So I don't know if you do away with the divisions to set yourself up for a second team. Maybe you look at it. I don't know. I don't have the answer. I know I'm supposed to, but keep giving me the divisions, and then just let the playoff committee make the call on a second Big Ten team or a third. I really think in a lot of years Wisconsin or Iowa has made enough arguments. If they're in a New Year's Day six, okay, they're your second or third team. You shouldn't be penalized for losing the conference title game. You should be part of the playoff. And you shouldn't also be penalized for being second if your only loss all season long is 3 points to Ohio State, like a lot of those Penn State games where they're score fest, and Penn State didn't close the deal. I think Penn State's soon to drop off. They don't have that elite offensive talent when they had Saquon and company, okay? They'll still be really good. When it comes to the West, I mean, Northwestern's a team that I know they stubbed their toe against Michigan State last year, but they were good and they found ways to win about every game. More from Thamel when it comes to different scenarios to consider. Could a league's top-ranked team get upset by an 8-4 team and end up having that league shut out of the college football playoff? I think if I'm the Pac-12, I'm really concerned about that. Absolutely. I'm not concerned about it if I'm the Big Ten or the SEC or even the Big 12 per se. But if I'm Central Florida, if I'm Oregon and I'm in a down Pac-12, I'm worried about it. The ACC, what happens, God forbid, if Clemson loses a non-conference showdown, one of those neutral site games, and then they get stung by somebody in the ACC championship. And it's not a vintage Miami team. This hurt Nebraska. This absolutely slapped Nebraska in the inaugural Big 12 title game, where James Brown and those pukes from Texas shocked Nebraska. Nebraska's going to play for another national championship. They were there. They could not score Texas that day. That was weird, man. His defense carried the 96 Huskers all season long. And you had a game where a lot of, this isn't excuse making, ask Coach Darlington or Grant or whoever, you had a lot of dudes with the flu, and then you had to suspend Terrell Farley as well. So you were he was short and All-American, and Mike Minter played well, mind you. He did really well filling in outside backer. But the point is Texas and Priest Holmes, with Ricky Williams blocking for him, mind you. John Makovic was brilliant. They were an 8-win Texas team, 7-win Texas team that scored 37 that day. We won't bring that up to Warfield tomorrow, even though he had a great game. But that's your case in point, where coaches 25 years ago were freaking out over conference title games. Now they print money. They're too expensive. They're too much revenue to not have. But I don't think the Big Ten jacks with the divisions. I don't think the SEC jacks with divisions. I think you could see the Pac-12 do it.
And then the Big 12 already doesn't have divisions? Is that correct?
No, it's just round robin.
So I think that could be.
And their two best teams play. But again, it's only a 10-team league.
But that could be the response from the Big Ten, is just see if the Big 12 has become... Do they get an advantage in college football playoff selection?
Do they get a second or third team over a Big Ten?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I mean, I think right now your playoff predictor says, okay, you're going to get Oklahoma in as one of your four, and then Iowa State's a good enough team to be a second. What's Texas do, right? Well, you're going to have an early non-conference showdown, kind of an elimination and an argument game with what Iowa does and Iowa State. They play every year, third week of September. The Civil War goes on there in Iowa. And that'll tell a lot. We'll see how good Iowa is this year. What do they do in the West? How do they navigate the crossovers? And are they a 10-2 team with like they were 2 years ago, where they had two or three losses by a combined total of 12 points? This is good for Nebraska, too. We talked about Coach Osborne. We talked about his message. There's enough talent to hang and be with anybody on a given Saturday. What do you do with that talent? Well, you expand the playoff for 2023. There is an opportunity to do some work. If you're Nebraska, get in the picture. It's now expanded. It's not just four. You can still get better, close in on Ohio State, compete with Ohio State someday. I mean, you have in the Frost era. Not the last two games, but the first time you met them, you absolutely did. Shoulda, coulda, woulda beat them. That door's open, and that door's going to be held open for the Big Ten and the SEC. But the Big 12, they've got their opportunity to get there, too. What happens with the Pac-12? I don't know. We'll take your calls. Coming up, 466-3776.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Thanks for hanging out. Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris and Elijah. Find us on Twitter, Chris Schmidt at Schmidt_radio, at Herbal Essence for Elijah. So, saw this on Twitter, and I think it's great. Elijah, make a case for me, for you, to be on the college football playoff committee. Let's put a fan on the committee. The thing I saw that was funny was Dr. Pepper Larry. I was called Dr. Pepper here. That guy as part of the playoff committee. That's hilarious. And why not? Because you're going to have some folks that are commissioners, former coaches, people in the media. 1 year, Condoleezza Rice was on there, and gone are the days of having Osborne and Barry Alvarez on there, two coaches that know football. But now, why not kind of do the average Joe thing and put a fan on there? I nominate Elijah Herbal.
The case for myself is I've been watching college football, I mean, for as long as I can remember, since I was, I mean, got to be five or six. I'd wake up on Saturday mornings and I'd watch College Game Day. And then I would watch all the college football games for the day. And considering now I don't have a wife, I don't have a girlfriend, I can spend the entirety of my Saturdays watching college football. And it's in fact my job for here to go and watch all the college football games that I can. I'm not like these old guys that are currently on the committee. They have, you know, grandkids they have to go spend time with. They have a wife. They
don't
have kids.
Don't kid yourself. They went away from their wife, and if their grandkids scream, they sure as hell went away from their grandkids.
Well, I thought I was making a pretty good point there.
No,
but
no, it is. You're not attached to adult things yet.
No, I care much more about football and about finding the best 12 teams in the country than I do about a girlfriend right now. That is just simply where I'm at in life. So I think I could do a much better job. But even if I don't get the nod as the fan on the college football committee, even if, I mean, that's never going to happen. They should. I think they should at least add some more transparency into the process, though. I hate that the process, oh, they're getting together, they're going to meet, and tomorrow we're going to find out who they've picked. Give us a live stream of what these guys are saying. Like, I want to hear their rationale.
Let us in. We don't want
to. We don't have to be on the committee. Just let us hear what the committee has to say.
Let's just live stream it. Mic it up like it's Monday Night Football.
Like it's a city council meeting. Let's have fans in attendance. Let's have them cheering whenever the committee says something good for their team and booing when the committee says something bad for their team. Make it fun. But that's a little over the top, I know. But at the end of the day, though, I want to know why the committee is picking one team over another. And to this point, we haven't had it. We've had the pundits on the selection show on ESPN telling us, well, they didn't get in because of their strength of schedule.
It's the eye test, Elijah.
You don't know. Let me hear what the committee has to say. Why did this team not pass the committee's eye test? Why is this two-loss team from the SEC getting in? Well, what about them is so much better than this group of five undefeated team? Let me know. That's what I want from the College Football Committee.
This is not fair or nice to say, but it does cross my mind. You've got SEC, you've got ESPN, and they are partners. They're business partners. And as a entity, I mean, you don't have the game. That's CBS that shells out for the 2:30 Saturday, right? CBS is very specific and, quite frankly, brilliant with their investments. They get you, you know, Bama, whoever, nine times out of ten, Saturday at 2:30. They have your NCAA tournament. They have your Masters. Then they're good, okay? I mean, they cherry pick beautifully.
Oh, and then, but you can't forget about their NFL too. They have one of the best broadcast teams in Tony Romo.
I was getting to the NFL, but you're right. I mean, they have your wow ball games again. Your Sunday afternoon. It's not Sunday night like NBC, and it's not your Saturday night ESPN. But it's really pretty good.
It's America's game of the week.
It is. So CBS does it right, but ESPN and the SEC. You got the SEC Network. Listen, those guys are really class and high level and talented with what they do covering games. But don't kid yourself. You've got, and if you're in business with somebody, you got to back them and promote them. But you're going to get hammered. I mean, we're going to have this moment, and it's great for debate. But if it becomes implemented, it's a problem. It's a problem if Auburn or if Mississippi or Tennessee or pick a third or fourth rung SEC squad in the pecking order gets a nod over a third Big Ten team. If you lay out the schedules and say, okay, here's who you played in the non-conference, here's what your record was, and then you get the song and dance eye test. I love your idea about live streaming this discussion. Let's make it transparent.
Because we're getting these tinfoil hat theories about them putting the SEC teams in now because it's not transparent. This is why it needs to be implemented, is because we're sitting here going, oh, are they putting this SEC team in because they're partnered with SEC Network? And do I think that's it?
And guess what? Nine times out of ten in the old system, you're going to see a 9-3 Auburn play a 9-2 Wisconsin. Who's going to win that game? Well, for a while, the SEC would trounce. Recently, the Big Ten's done well against the SEC, not named Purdue. Okay? All right? Other than that, it's worked out okay when you get the head-to-head. But then you're going to, well, they didn't want to be there. Well, whatever. Okay? What's fascinating, though, is that Auburn example. Okay, where you can have an Auburn team that one Saturday can take down Georgia and can take down Alabama as both play for the national championship, but yet Auburn can stub their toe and go 8-4 and then get rocked by a really good Central Florida team. So you want to talk about consistency, where are you? and it's one of the reasons Gus is now at Central Florida, which is idiotic, but it's off the Yellow Brick Road we go. So I love that. Let me see the meetings, put a fan there, or let's get a panel of fans from the Power Five and a group of five. Let's throw some fans in there.
Well, ESPN could make money if they're putting up on ESPN the selection meetings, like a little 2-hour thing on that what is that, Sunday afternoon? Put it up. You don't have any NFL games to cover.
No, you don't.
On that Sunday afternoon. Just put up the I mean, they could make money off of this. I don't see why they're not doing it. It's got to be the commission members don't want their opinions out there. They want to be able to be able to say what they say without fear of retribution.
I think what you do is you make it a little more reality TV friendly.
Ooh, like Bachelor style.
Well, you could. I'm not a Bachelor guy, but I think you keep bringing beer and you lock in. You have a spokesperson, and then you have five other committee members that are fans that are selected per conference, and then they come to a uniform decision, and their voice is heard. Let's spread it out from one fan to one fan per league, and it's a Sunday of beer drinking, and reason, because that always happens. And then their input can be shared and maybe taken.
While we're this deep in the woods, why not just make it like Shark Tank style? We got the committee all sitting up there, and you have an athletic director and a coach, and like maybe the team captain walk in, and they give their pitch why they think they should be in the college football playoff, and then the committee just rips them apart.
Give me the best beer pong player in the Big Ten to go head-to-head with the best beer pong player in the SEC, and there's who gets their vaunted third team in. We'll wind down a Tuesday at Hail Varsity presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HailVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hail Varsity Radio.
One thing that's interesting, if the Big Ten were to punt divisions, you've got Ohio State, and then fair to say that gap for number two is shrunk? I think it has. I mean, it's not James Franklin and Penn State is your clear-cut number two every year anymore. They're human now. I mean, it's interesting. We'll see. Ohio State's good. Penn State, Wisconsin, Iowa, Northwestern. You do have Vic who emails in. He likes six conference champs. Maybe eight conference champs. What he doesn't want is to see the trilogy of Bama-Georgia. Because you could get Bama-Georgia in the regular season. You get Bama-Georgia in the conference title game. Would you get him in the third? So, that's good stuff. It'll work out. Bottom line is the doors, it's not just a single door where you got to know the password. It's expanded to the point where there's eight other teams that can fight, and then you get to the semis and see if you got one shining moment in you. It's going to be tough, though, to win. There's no one who's going to win three straight to go call it. It's not like basketball. With football, winning three straight, it's a tough ask. It's a big-time tough ask, even if you get to host that opening round game at your home site.
Yeah, I mean, the college football playoff, like, they're throwing in these group of five teams as, like, Cinderellas, I guess, if you will. And I don't think there's going to be a Cinderella, at least in the near future, in the college football playoff. I mean, you might get the one-off that's able to go do it, and it's going to be an incredible story, and they're going to do 30 for 30s on it in 20 years. But I just don't think that the way this is set up, I guess we don't know how long these teams are going to have in between games. But
a week.
I mean, you would think that they'd got to expand that just a little bit. 2 weeks, maybe. I mean, if they're starting these after the, open up the bowl season with the first round, and then give them 2 weeks, and then it's the next round, and then a little after January 1st is the third round, and then you have the championship game mid-January. Give them 2 weeks between all the games. I think it could be a little bit more competitive. But I'm with you. Is if you're only giving teams a week in between these matchups, and now, I mean, you got to do all your game planning for the top teams in the country week in, week out. You're not going to have these teams that are coming from the first round of games into the championship game.
They're not going to survive the semis.
No.
Or, yeah, the quarters, excuse me. This is another email from Kent. he is going ageism on you. He wants somebody older than you, so he's nominating himself.
Oh, he probably can't even stay up for Pac-12 After Dark, though.
You know, I think he probably can.
I don't actually know Ken. I apologize, Ken.
Ken's good stuff.
This is not a personal attack, but I'm young and I stay up late and I watch Pac-12 After Dark, and you're probably in bed by 10:30.
Michael's got a good point. He hits us up on Twitter to Vic's point about not wanting to see the trilogy. And that's just it. We were talking about earlier, you're not going to have the SEC schedule and crossovers. I mean, it's been 10 years, it feels like, since Bama and Florida played in a crossover. They did this year. But most times you keep Bama safe. You keep LSU safe. I mean, eventually they come up on your schedule. But Michael tweets in, considering Bama and Georgia meet in the regular season as often as Neptune goes around the sun, I wouldn't worry about the trilogy. We'll talk more tomorrow. Thanks for hanging out.